Hey, guess what, you guys? It's Saturday, June 29th, 2013. We're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio 88.9 and KUSP.org. And it's time now for Geek Speak. Mitchell, just have to take my word for it. Insert very cool Geek Speak music here. Yeah, help me out, Ben.
Is that my mic? That's my mic.
I'm trying to figure this out. There's been a lot of activity.
Technical difficulties. A room full of geeks. Really.
We're working to make this work. Anyway, so welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. I'm your host, Bonnie Jean Primsch, a mediator and broadcaster at large, I swear, filling in for Lyle Troxell. And with me in the air room is Sam Jaffe, robotics aficionado and part-time teacher, and Ben Jaffe, Sam's brother. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hey, what's up?
Ben, you're also a web instructor and world traveler.
I am, yes. Yeah. Although I taught intro to programming this last week. It was really fun.
To intro to programming?
Yeah, to teens.
To teens? Did they take to it?
Yeah, they did. It was amazing. I was like, here's Java, and here's how you do one thing in Java. And then I looked up, and they had finished the project. It was kind of amazing.
Like this? Is this how you do it?
And I'm like, what do I do now?
What did you do? Did you show
a
movie?
Fast. You know, like we always joke on the show about me being the young one. Of course, my younger brother's here. But like in that class, I felt really old. I was like, God, I don't learn that fast anymore.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
Yeah, they keep getting faster and faster.
They do.
Anyway, hi, Sam. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah. So we have a number of news stories today. We'll also be taking your calls a little bit later on in the program. Why don't we start with the death of some good things?
Oh.
Boom, boom.
We'll start with the sad. We'll start with the sad. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there are two services that are stopping very soon. One is that Yahoo is stopping AltaVista. Anyone remember AltaVista?
I remember those words.
It was the search. Yeah, that's kind of where most people are, right?
Yeah.
It was a search engine for, it's been up for, what, 15 years or something? It was, for a while, the best search engine, I suppose that's debatable, but it was one of the best search engines where people went before Google. And they also, I think, did hosting as well. And Yahoo currently owns AltaVista, and they are pulling the plug after 15 dedicated years of service. Only five of which people actually cared about, and then 10 years of of it just kind of hanging around.
So
that's going away. That's going away in July. I can't give you the exact date because, ironically, the website that has the date is down. So there's
the system is down.
Systems are down.
Okay. And also...
Ooh, this one actually hurts.
That one gets you at where you live.
This next one is Google Reader. Google Reader is going away. We've been talking about this for months. But like most people,
grief
I'm
takes
like,
time. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Google Reader's going away. You know, I'll just keep taking it for granted as the most awesome way to prepare for Geek Speak. Mm-hmm. So July 1st is when they're pulling the plug. Which means I'm not going to be on Geekspeak anymore, guys, because I can't prepare for the shows.
Oh, come on. You can figure it out.
Yeah, I'll find something.
You do have a little bit left of your adaptable brain, old man.
A little bit left. So, I'm 27. I'm not old.
I'm 27 years old.
So there's that as well. And that makes me actually quite sad because there are a number of good Google Reader replacements, but none of them work exactly like Google Reader. And, being the growing curmudgeon that I am, I just want things to stay the same, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's sad. I will, however, post a link up on the show page of some different alternatives. If anyone who's listening uses Google Reader, for those of you who don't use Google Reader, just very briefly, it's a way of taking feeds of, in my case, tech news sites, and organizing all of the feeds into one nice stream. And then I can go ahead and favorite things. I can star things. I can move things around.
Flag them to read later.
Flag them to read later or read them right then.
So it's a way of organizing that wide swath of drifty time where you will wander around on the internet and then where did all your time go?
Exactly, yeah. It's some way of doing that. Of course, you end up just wasting all of your time on Google Reader instead.
Spend it in one place.
Yeah. But I don't know. I like Google Reader instead of something like Reddit because Google Reader, it's actually usually, depending on your feeds, I suppose, can be very productive, whereas Reddit is all in jokes and things.
It's just a chat fest.
It's just a chat fest, so Whatever.
Well, so long, Google Reader. May it rest in peace.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. Not to point out how old you are and how, you know, sort of vibrant and active and nubile the youth are. But, Sam, you've got a story about a teenager who designed something quite ingenious.
Yeah, she was... it's Anne Makozinski, and she's 15 years old. She was in the Google Global Science Fair. She's actually one of 15 finalists, and she made a flashlight that has no batteries, no moving parts, and it runs off of the heat of her hand.
What?
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Do you know how that works?
Yes, sort of. Yeah, pretty
sort
much.
Of. Maybe.
I know the parts, what they do, but not how they do it. So there's a thing called a thermocouple. So you have... two bits of metal, and when one is hotter than the other, it produces a voltage. So she basically used that, has one side, her hand, being whatever, 98.6 degrees, and then the inside being the ambient air, which is going to be colder.
And that produces enough voltage to make light?
Yeah, it actually produces a couple millivolts and a noticeable amount of current. So it's only about 5 candles of lightness, but if you go outside during the wintertime, it'll probably be a lot more.
But how do you keep your hands warm in the wintertime?
That's a very good point. So are there special gloves that encompass, like cover the flashlight?
That's next, my son.
Yeah.
There's your next million.
Gosh.
You can get back on top.
Amazing. That's really cool. One of the... It reminds me of an invention that I once saw, which was a solar-powered flashlight without a battery. No. If you hold it out in the sun, it produces voltage, and then it shines the light. But, of course, the question is, if you're in the sun, why do you need a flashlight, right?
Right.
So that's like the useless version of this. This is actually kind of cool.
But no, wait, I have a solar... Well, no, it's not a solar flashlight. I have a glow-in-the-dark flashlight. Never mind.
I guess if you were like... trying to shine a flashlight into a corner or something, and you were outside, and it was a dark corner. I don't know. I mean, I'm just making stuff up now. You could just use a mirror, right?
Right, a mirror, yeah.
Yeah.
Or just one of those, like, white reflecto screens that the photographers are...
Yeah. I love these things that just... I mean, they're simple. You know, like the hand-crank flashlights and hand-crank radios. Mm-hmm. And this one using... using the temperature of your hand.
The differential between the temperature of your hand and the temperature of the air inside the flashlight? Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's a hollow flashlight so air can float around inside.
Yeah.
It's just wind and stuff.
Got it.
Crazy times.
Yeah.
Wow. What's the world coming to? Well, speaking of inventions that may be useful, potentially.
Crazy kids.
I saw something on the Boing Boing. Boing boing.net.
You saw something. What's a boing boing?
Boing boing.net. That's my only source of tech news. It's you guys and boing boing.net.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I feel like I should know what boing boing is, but...
It's a blog that started off as a zine, and it's a collective...
What's a zine?
Oh, honey.
Magazine.
It's a magazine, but on the DL, you know.
Oh, okay. All right.
On the homemade.
The DL?
On the down low.
The download.
Oh, you kids are learning all kinds of things today from me.
So what's your news?
Oh, so this dude came up with a magnetic Mobius strip, and then he did like a superconductor kind of magnet, and it just sort of levitated around on the Mobius strip and zoomed all around.
I see.
So that seems really cool, but what's it for?
What's it for? Well, okay, first I just have to say...
Yeah.
I've seen a video of this before, but not with a Mobius strip.
Right.
So I've seen this where they basically put a whole bunch of really, really strong magnets along some kind of a track. I'm putting air quotes around that.
Yeah,
you know,
track.
You make it into a track or just a strip of magnets. And then you put a superconductor, some kind of special superconductor, on top of it, and it'll just float on top of it. And beyond that, it won't just float on top of it like a magnet would on top of another magnet. It'll actually stick to it. So if you turn the whole track upside down, it will still hover close to the magnets.
It's stalactites and stalagmites.
But
this one's even cooler because it's not just a track. It's a Mobius strip. And whenever you make anything into a Mobius strip, it's an order of magnitude cooler for geeks, right?
What is a Mobius strip?
Okay, you could do this actually with a piece of paper. If you take a strip of paper and then you make it into a loop, but you turn one of the sides halfway around once, then if you follow along the side of the paper, it'll actually, you'll end up on the other side, and then you'll end up on the side you started. It's basically a one-sided object. Right. Even though that seems like it would be impossible in our three-dimensional space.
Because as you keep walking, you sort of naturally, just by walking forward, are on the inside of it and on the outside of it.
Yeah, because of that single twist.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Yeah, that's a good question, though. Sam, can you think of some uses of this?
Well,
because, I mean, like, I want a magnetic Mobius strip in my house, but...
Yeah, as far as superconductors right now, the technology is you need liquid nitrogen and to keep it cold to make it superconducting.
Because it only works when it's really cold.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So if we find superconductors or create them such that they don't have to be cooled that much and it could be room temperature, we could just line the roads with magnets and then hover along in frictionless automobiles.
Ooh.
Not even automobiles, just little things you sit on and push off and you get
like
going.
Like Segways, but
Segways.
Different.
Exactly.
That'd be kind of cool.
It's like hoverboards from, you know, Marty McFly and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, all that.
Could you do a magnetic bumper car thing?
You could. You could do that.
That would be really neat.
Oh, the magnets and magnets.
But you wouldn't be...
magnets and magnets and magnets.
But you wouldn't be able to walk onto the track wearing some kind of a bracelet or something.
Yeah, which is, help.
Because your hand goes onto the ground and you're just stuck.
You have to be stripped of all of your implants and things.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, if you have a piece of metal inside you, it doesn't
Quing.
Work.
Speaking
yeah.
of implants, I have another story about a guy who implanted magnets into his ears.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
wait, for why?
Well, first of all, there are people, right, who just kind of enjoy sticking things inside of them. Like people will implant little like horn nubules or extra little rivety
yeah.
bits on them and things
kind of
like that.
Tattoos, but the next step.
But harder core, yeah.
And
yeah.
harder core.
Like they'll insert little screws and they can just screw whatever they want to into the screw.
And this isn't new. Someone actually implanted a rectangle of magnets into their arm. And then put magnets on their iPod Nano so they could just stick it on without strapping it on. It just sticks on with magnets.
Oh, my gosh, really?
Use a little watch application. You have a watch.
That's kind of terrifying to me.
It is terrifying.
But it's so
seems
convenient.
To work.
I have heard of people who put a small magnet in one of their arms.
Yeah.
And then as they're moving around, their arm feels a very slight pull towards the North Pole.
And that way they always know where they are.
That way they can kind of just gather this intuitive sense of where north is. Mm. Like they can look at a compass and just, you know, and look at a compass a couple minutes later, look at a compass again.
Yeah.
And after a couple months of this, they can actually just start knowing somehow where yeah. north is. They can't feel consciously the pull of the magnet, but they can feel it. I guess they can detect it. So
that's pretty cool. Well, that's this fellow is up to something like that, right? Because he's going he's going blind.
So we'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah.
So your ears have the big curvy bit and then the little nubule that kind of sticks out. He had magnets implanted into those little nubules on each side. So when he wears a coil of wire around his neck with an amplifier and some audio source, he can actually move the magnet with the electromagnet around his neck to play sounds. So he can actually have wireless...
Oh, he's his own theremin?
He's pretty much sort of, yeah.
Whoa.
So he has pretty much wireless headphones by use of a giant wire.
So he has this wire around his neck and... Yeah. He just puts voltage through it and it moves it.
Basically, yeah.
That's kind of crazy. Yeah, yeah, but yeah, I mean, I guess my beef with that would be that it's not wireless, right?
Yeah, but I mean, anything that's wireless requires wires to make it wireless.
I mean, he can walk around and stuff. He carries the wire around with him. He's still portable.
I guess that's a good point. Yeah,
The point of wireless is portable, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to, yeah, that's true.
Wireless just means a disconnect somewhere.
Like, so if you, yeah.
A remote control car has wires in it somewhere.
That's
you can't
say
it's not wireless.
That's a very good point.
Come on, Ben.
You pedant. by the way, speaking of pedanticism, I looked up the little nubbin bit on your ear that we're talking about is the tragus. So those
tragus,
of you who are familiar
not the lobe,
with the
ladies and gentlemen,
anatomy of the ear, now you know what we're talking about.
All right.
One more thing. This guy actually also has little magnets implanted into his fingers. So when he plays music in his earphones and he puts his finger in his ear, can also hear music like that too.
What?
Yeah. So he actually originally did that so he could feel alternating current magnetic fields. So if you go up to a wall and you put your finger next to like a plug that's drawing a lot of current, then you can actually feel your finger vibrate at 60 hertz.
Wow, that's really neat.
This guy has a different everyday experience than you and me. Yeah. That's what I'm picking up. But yeah. Also, wasn't there something about how he wants to use it somehow for echolocation?
Because
he is going,
that's what
he's
it
losing
is.
His sight.
So if you have some ultrasonic rangefinder sensor pointing straight ahead, you can have that translated into a sound, which can then be fed wirelessly to your ear. So it could be discreet. You don't have to be wearing headphones all the time. Yeah. So we can have that, and then he apparently is going blind in one eye, so that'll compensate for that, and it'll be discreet, and it'll work.
How handy.
Wow.
Body hacking. You know, I guess if you told him to take off his headphones, though, he'd have to remove the wire around from around his neck instead of taking anything out of his ears.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat that the wireless disconnect is right there instead of between the things that you put on your ears and whatnot.
I do wonder how that guy gets around at the airport.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. Hey, you know what's going on is you're listening to Geek Speak here on KUSP.
Is that what's going on?
That's what's happening. This is an actual radio show that we are allowed to have on the air.
Hey, can I tell you guys about a new world record?
I bet you can. Let's see if you do it. Yeah. What happens?
The electric car. The previous record, the speed limit, was set by Battery Box General Electric back in 1974, 175 miles an hour.
That's very fast. That seems fast enough.
That seems very...
I'm just going to point that out.
No. We got to go faster, apparently. So, but you know what's amazing to me is how many years has that been? 40 years?
Many years.
God, I can't count anymore. I'm so used to it being 2000.
It was 2000. Even faster back then.
When it was 2000, the math was easy, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, in basically 40 years, we haven't beaten that record. Maybe because not many people were trying, right? But Drayson Racing Technologies has broken that record for the electric car, and they reached 204.2 miles per hour. So that got me thinking. Couldn't you just drop an electric car out of an aircraft, and that would be the new speed record? So I had to Google it, and I Googled, what is the terminal velocity of a car? Terminal velocity is the speed that it will equalize at when it's falling, right? Mm-hmm. So if it falls for long enough, it'll hit this velocity, and it'll not go any faster because of air resistance. Apparently, it's only 52 miles an hour if the car is falling flat. That's really a lot slower than I thought.
I go faster than that all the time.
Yeah. And so, but if you were to point the car falling straight down, it'd be 90 miles an hour.
Well, that's faster than that all the time.
That's.
But then
that's,
what?
That's incredible. I mean, that means that, well, okay, so anyway. Do you guys know what, by the way, the terminal velocity for a human being is?
242 miles per hour.
No, that's a little fast.
Oh, okay.
But an interesting and very specific guess, Sam.
I say it with authority and it's right.
Yeah, 120 miles an hour. But
what is that? That's me falling?
That's you just kind of falling in a random position.
Whoops.
For like 30 seconds. You'll eventually equalize right at about 120 miles an hour.
Okay.
But if you point yourself straight down, 210 miles an hour if you're experienced.
Mm.
It's really fast.
If you're experienced.
And then you can go faster than that electric car did.
Right.
By a couple.
Well, here's what I don't understand. Speed isn't really the issue with electric cars. It's distance. We want to keep going.
Well, not really. I mean, who's going to buy electric cars? I mean, you have different markets, right? So there's actually this whole thing where they're trying to make motorsport electric cars so people will adopt electric technology and battery technology. But it'll be cool. It won't be like, oh, I have my electric car. It can go 150 miles, but it's really weak and doesn't accelerate fast, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that element, too,
mm-hmm.
making it interesting for people.
Yeah.
There is. Sam has now officially weighed in. You are not a billiard ball, by the way. What? That's on the next 7th Avenue project. Renowned philosopher Daniel Dennett discusses the meaning of life with KUSP's Robert Polly. Despite his reputation as a cold-blooded materialist, Dennett says life does have meaning, and we do have a sort of soul, even if it's composed of a lot of tiny robots. Consciousness, selfhood, and free will explained on the next 7th Avenue project, Sunday at noon on 88.9 KUSP or KUSP.org. That show continues to be intriguing to me.
That show is just awesome.
Yeah.
That's the word for it.
That's an official endorsement from GeekSpeak. Listen to the 7th Avenue Project, Sundays at noon on KUSP. And yet, the news is not over. There's more geekery to discuss.
Oh, there is much more. Yes. So this is fairly exciting. So as you guys may know, I'm very interested in our search for exoplanets, which are planets that are outside of our solar system. So the planets that you're familiar with.
You're like
with,
our space correspondent.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm here from Neptune. No, so yeah, we have our eight planets, of course. Some people will shout at the radio, no, we have nine. But, you know, Pluto is a Plutoid. It gets its own entire category. That's something
special
that...
Special status.
Not a lot of people know.
You know, just because they give you a fancy title does not mean you've been promoted.
Well, that's true. But not only did they give Pluto a fancy title of Plutoid, but they also gave all of its brethren. They're all called Plutoids.
Okay, point.
So,
okay.
You know, there it is. Anyway, we've been studying this star, Gliese 667c. It's only 22 light years, you know, that's all.
That's practically nothing.
On the galactic scale, it's pretty close, you know?
Yeah.
And something that we haven't detected until very recently is that it's got not only a lot of planets around it, at least six exoplanets in orbit, mm-hmm. but three of them are actually within the star's habitable zone, which means these three planets that we're looking at might have liquid water, which means they might have life, bacterial life or otherwise.
So the alien invasion is nigh, is what you're saying. Is that it?
Yes. Maybe. No. I'm not saying anything about aliens. Nope. No. But anyway, I also love the way we make these discoveries. I've talked at length about the techniques that we use. I'll just really quickly explain. If you want a more detailed one, you can go back in the show or the previous shows. But this was from the High Accuracy Radial Velocity Planet Searcher, or HARPS. That's a lot easier to say. And that's over in Europe. In Chile, not in Europe. And what it does is it looks for the wobble of stars. So if you're familiar with the Doppler effect, that's the effect that you get when an ambulance... Exactly, yeah. When someone's honking their horn and they pass you, does that, or a train or ambulance. That happens with light too. And so what happens is these planets tug on their stars. And not only do the planets orbit the stars actually orbit the planets in a little way too. They kind of move around each other. Yeah. And so the stars end up with this wobble.
Okay.
And this wobble, you can actually detect it, because if the wobble means that the star is moving towards Earth or away from Earth, that means that the light is going to be slightly blue shifted or slightly red shifted.
Oh.
Just like the car horn is slightly shifted up or slightly shifted down in pitch, same thing with light and frequencies.
I understand.
Yeah. And so by looking at this for a really long time, we can figure out exactly what the wobble is, and we can infer what the planet, how many planets there are, roughly where they are, roughly what their mass is. We can infer their size. In fact, we're estimating that the masses of these three planets are 2.7 to 3.8 times the mass of Earth. So quite a bit bigger, but still, I mean, potentially could have life. So that's kind of cool. We're making these discoveries all the time. Of course, it's especially interesting because they have Gliese 667c. That star has three in it, you know, three in the habitable zone. So yeah. Anyway, that's my exoplanet news.
Chances to win.
News.
Win what? We don't know yet.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
You said the word phone, which reminds me that we have these phones here, and you can call them, and then we can talk to you.
Ooh,
we could
that'd
ask
be cool.
Questions and stuff. The phone number to call is 800-655-5877. Dial that if you want to weigh in on the topics that we've mentioned so far, or if you've got a question or a wild hair, whatever you got. Rick's here to answer the phone, so we'd love to hear from you. So keep that in mind. Meanwhile, I hear there's been some adorableness in 3D printing land, Sam.
Ah, yes, there was some adorableness. Have you heard of Buttercup the Duck?
No.
No.
Well,
that's a great name for a duck, I just have to say.
Yeah, Buttercup.
So Buttercup, he was born, unfortunately, with a backwards left foot, and the owners of Buttercup decided to amputate, unfortunately, because it was painful and unfortunate.
Yeah.
But they happen to have access to a 3D printer or a site where they could get something 3D printed. Mm-hmm. So they used Buttercup's sister or brother, sibling, modeled its left foot, which was the one that was amputated on Buttercup, and created a 3D model of that left foot, and is now, they're now trying to attach it to Buttercup.
Oh, see.
So
they have the foot.
They have the foot.
They have the duck.
I believe they have the mold.
I think Bonnie has lost it. That's amazing, though. So they're 3D printing a foot for the
yes,
stump.
Yes, they are. So it says Buttercup currently walking around on his stump is due to get his new foot very soon.
And it's a short article, huh? I really
yes,
want to know. This.
Three paragraphs.
I really would like to know how poor Bonnie is over there dying. I'd really like to know how do you 3D print a duck foot? I mean, do you just use normal plastic or do you...
you mold it.
You know, actually, I don't know how long ago plotting
is
lasers,
a thing. Science happens.
The things,
technology,
the stuff. I think it was maybe 6 months ago, maybe a year ago. We actually covered a story of I don't remember what kind of bird it was, but it didn't have a complete bill, mm-hmm. and so
That's
we
right.
actually yeah or a beak. We so
let's
they,
make it a bill. Let's say it was another duck.
A bill. All right, and so they printed a piece of a beak that would fit into the missing area of the beak,
yeah.
so that way the duck would have a full beak.
Yeah, but how? How did they do it?
These are like first world ducks, right?
Yeah,
to be able to afford this,
you couldn't get rid of your beak and get a new one.
What's the Buttercup the duck's bank account? Wow.
Yeah.
I know.
That's
well,
it's fantastic.
As people are getting their 3D printers in the comfort of their own home, I suppose they could do all kinds of first aid.
Yeah. I guess that's true. Yeah.
It's just one lucky duck.
Well, a lucky duck.
Let's see. It looks like we've got a call coming in. Do we know who it's from?
Ed in Aptos, I think.
Oh, well, let's talk to Ed.
So, yeah.
Let's see what Ed has to
say. La-di-da. Ed.
Good. Someone wants to talk to me today.
Oh. Yeah, yeah, we do. Hi, Ed. We care.
To get someone to talk to me, I always have to call radio stations, I tell you.
Oh.
Just kidding. I have a question about Lunchbox computers, but before we do, I have a quick comment that I found your story this morning about the heat sensor, heat-driven flashlights. Very humorous, because as soon as you said it, all I pictured was up on the UCSC campus, a group of college-age boys with these flashlights walking by a group of college-age girls, and I can picture this in a movie.
And suddenly their flashlights get brighter.
Flashlights get brighter and brighter and brighter. The girls' flashlights get brighter and brighter. And as they get really close, the boys' flashlights are blinding the girls, and the girls' flashlights all go off. It would be a very good scene in a movie.
You've created your next Funny or Die segment.
There you go. The Lunchbox computers. I have to, onto a boring topic, I have to buy some very expensive CAD software like Autodesk and SolidWorks. And I'm looking at trying to, I need a notebook and a desktop, and I'm trying to combine the two. And I'm looking at lunchboxes, and bare bones lunchboxes are ridiculous at about $2,000.
And I'm just going to pop in here and ask a question. Sure. What are lunchbox computers? That's something I'm not familiar with.
Lunchbox computers are basically small desktops where the screen is stuck in the side and the keyboard stuck in the side. Mm-hmm. And most of them, the front, with their keyboard is pops down and the screen's right in front of you. But it's basically a really fat notebook where you can put off-the-shelf computer part, desktop parts, mm-hmm. and it's, you can upgrade it as the years go on instead of being stuck with what's in a notebook.
So it's like modular and convenient in that way.
Right. Yeah. And notebook or desktop, I'm looking at basically $12,000 and up computers mm-hmm. for the parts I'll be putting in them.
Yeah, they're fairly expensive.
Yeah, but to run CAD decently, you have to either use a Fire Pro or a Quadro video card. You have to use ECC RAM if Google's specs are right. Bits flip far more frequently than we think in our RAM.
Yeah.
And so if you go ECC, you have to go Xeon because AMD fell behind the ball this last time around.
Yeah. And so
I'd love to buy AMD.
Basically, you have to use desktop parts in order for it to be affordable and make sense, right?
No, well, there are notebooks that do this. They're just, with all of this in it, start at like $5,000. And go up. So I was wondering if you guys had any recommendations, because what I'm looking at, I'm thinking of just buying a very small, that I can handle an ATX, hopefully an EATX motherboard, and just learn how to weld and start modifying my own case, because I've found nothing satisfactory on the market.
Yeah, I'm afraid I don't have any recommendations for you because I have never worked with that hardware. I wish Lyle was here. He might have some ideas, or Miles. They're much more into that. Sam, any thoughts?
No, I usually just buy a Mac.
Oh gosh.
Well, welding is fun. It's fun to learn a new thing.
You just
go that route because you feel crafty.
Yeah.
I'm really glad I brought up the flashlight joke because that was the highlight.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. Go ahead and email us. And if any of the other geeks, we have a lot of geeks on the geeks list. And if any of the other geeks have any ideas, then they might be able to respond with some thoughts.
I very much appreciate it. Have a great day.
Yeah. Thank you
too,
so
Ed.
Much.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know what's so interesting to me about Lunchbox Computers is the name is so apt. Imagine a computer mm-hmm. in the form factor of a lunchbox, mm-hmm. and you have a lunchbox computer. You know,
Do you lift it up like when I had my emergency lunchbox from childhood? Emergency, like the show with the exclamation point! Emergency! I had that one. Also, a Dukes of Hazzard one. There was. Then I just lifted the lid to get at my lunch. So you lift the lid to get at the screen?
Yeah, a lot of them you fold down the keyboard from the side, and then the screen is there on the side.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, and they don't have lunch inside.
There's no lunch.
No lunch inside, no.
Misnomer.
And yeah. Bummer.
Things are more exciting when there's lunch involved.
Yeah. So the call lines are free, so we'd like to invite people to call in. The phone number is, again, 1-800-655-5877.
Hey, what's going on with Apple Files? There's some sort of a patent or something?
Apple Files? Oh, sure. Yeah, I can talk about that.
Oh, the Apple is filing a patent. That's what's going on.
Yeah. Apple just filed a patent for a new proprietary port. Basically, the idea is if you want to squeeze multiple ports in a limited space, mm-hmm. what if instead of having multiple ports just smaller, what if you had a port which was two ports in one?
Ooh.
Where you maybe had a little thing that you plugged into that which broke it out into several USB ports, or maybe into a monitor port and a FireWire or something like that. In other words, you can save space while still having the same amount of input and output with a laptop.
It's like an extension cord for plugins.
Except it puts multiple in one.
So it's like a fancy adapter.
It's like a fancy adapter that puts multiple into one. Because all of our adapters are just, like, if you look at the side of your computer.
Yeah.
Like, on the side of my computer, I have
power.
Yeah,
I've got, like, an HDMI, I've got a USB.
Yeah,
I've
your
got
USB some... is only for USB. Your uh-huh. HDMI is only for HDMI.
Right.
Your Ethernet is only for Ethernet.
Right, right.
But their idea is have a port which has multiple ports in that one plug.
So you plug a thing in, and then it's got a bunch of different kind of looking holes, and then you can plug the different things into those different
Maybe.
Holes.
Maybe. Something like that. Maybe this should be a geek bit.
yeah. The people want a visual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I.e.
So this will be up on the website sometime pretty soon. So this two-in-one port, this is what Apple just filed a patent for. What strikes me is it's such a simple idea.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine nobody else has thought of this before. I'm curious... It's always interesting to look at patents and things with a patent system, because the patent system is so broken. It's so thoroughly broken, at least in the
American
United
life.
States. Yeah. See This American Life. There's a great show on that.
Or two. I guess they're just chock-a-block with proprietary ports, though, those guys.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, most of their ports are. They do have the mini DisplayPort, which incidentally is not all that related to DisplayPort. It's a proprietary Apple thing, even though it has a similar name. And DisplayPort is an open one. I'm talking from memory here. I think I have that right.
Doesn't it seem like the smart money is on making one, like getting a patent, but making it usable on multiple kinds of computers? Because that's mo money.
Yeah.
All of it is. Yeah. I mean, patents. Patents are where the money is. Yeah. Hmm. I got another story, though.
What is it? I wonder what it is.
Which I'm slightly more interested in. And this is a Facebook.
You don't like the squid plug?
Apple patents, whatever. the squid plug. So this is a Facebook story. And normally I'm very negative about Facebook, because most of the Facebook stories are Facebook has decided
Facebook
to
horror of the week.
Revert your privacy settings or Facebook this, Facebook that. But what happened recently is Facebook had a technical flaw for actually quite a while before it was caught, mm-hmm. and they said that they had inadvertently exposed 6 million users' phone numbers and email addresses to unauthorized viewers. Now, just to clarify, unauthorized viewers in this case is other people who have a Facebook account who shouldn't have been able to see that other Facebook user's phone number. Mm-hmm. They also say that in most of the situations, in most of the cases, like let's say if I was one of the affected users and my phone number got exposed to somebody else, it was probably only exposed to one other person, not many, many, many people, right? So in terms of security issues and I guess boo-boos, this is a much smaller...
Yes, it's just
I said
a boo-boo.
Boo-boo. I said the boo-boo.
It's just a boo-boo.
It's a small boo-boo, right? Mm. It's not all that bad in terms of the effect it had on Facebook users. Now, I guess the reason I'm interested in bringing this up is because I think it's important to remember that there's a distinction between technical issues where people make honest mistakes mm-hmm. and policy decisions, right? Like Facebook's privacy policy, for example, mm-hmm. Or the choices that they make in terms of setting your privacy settings to a default when you sign up and things like that.
That's
right?
Like a conscious decision that an entire company makes.
Exactly. That's a conscious decision that the company has decided to make, or someone high up in the company has decided to make. Mm-hmm. And that's something they're intentionally doing. But at the same time, there are these technical issues, right? Security issues, things like that. They can come about from not enough testing, mm-hmm. or they can just come about from making an honest mistake that they just couldn't really have easily detected.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen. That probably happens more frequently than we're aware. And of course, it's best when the companies come out and say, "Hey, guys, you wouldn't have known, but we made a mistake and we just remedied it." You know, so I appreciate that. But when you're reading about Facebook issues and, you know, Facebook being evil and Facebook exposing, you know, I mean, this is 6 million users as well out of their 1.1 billion users worldwide, right? Mm-hmm. So, again, it's a relatively small thing. But when you see Facebook says technical flaw exposed 6 million users, it feels like a really heavy headline. So I guess that's really the distinction I'd like to make is just between people who are really trying hard in a company making an honest mistake and a whole company making a policy decision that is maybe evil.
Yeah.
So
even Facebook is made of people.
Facebook is by definition
made of
1.1 billion people in their accounts. But the company too. Yeah.
And the company too. Well, guys, it's Geek Speak. We're going to hear from Gordon in Santa Cruz in just a moment after this break. Once again, if you would like to call us, the phone number is 1-800-655-5877. And this is the Geek Speak show where we have on the line Gordon in Santa Cruz. Hi, Gordon.
Good morning, friends.
How's it going?
I have two Windows machines. I bought a new one, and I want to migrate some information from one machine to the other, and I have two questions. And the first one is, my new computer has Windows 8, and my experience with Windows 8 has been very negative. It's brand new, it's got 8.0, how do I get 8.1 on it these days?
Windows 8.1?
Yeah.
I actually have not. Windows questions, right?
Windows questions.
I haven't used Windows 8 personally. Have you tried using the update mechanism in the operating system?
You know, I just got the computer yesterday. I haven't even powered it up yesterday, yet. Uh-huh. And I'm just wanting to spare myself of any grief I can. I want to, probably before I do anything else, I want to get it updated to where I can use the interface I'm familiar with rather than the tablet form. I have to say my experience with Windows 8 is my daughter has one, and it was native language in French. Mm-hmm. So not only did I have the problem of the interface I was totally unfamiliar with, I couldn't understand any of the words that were trying to explain it.
That doesn't help.
It was a really negative experience.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Mm.
Now I've got it, I assume, in English, but... I really would prefer more of an older Windows experience, having another computer in my office which uses Windows 7. I have no problem with that. I understand there are some other upgrades that make it worthwhile to have.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to get back to a format almost immediately that I can work with before I start putting information on it.
Yeah. Well, my intuition about it would be to power it up. It'll power into Windows 8, assuming that that's the operating system that's installed on the machine that you bought. And then figure out how to install 8.1 immediately. It's probably a fairly simple thing.
If you find the update setter, use the update setter, huh?
Yeah, that's what I do.
It's probably going to be easier than trying to do it on the old computer and then transfer that. It would be harder.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to do that. Yeah. So you probably do have to boot into Windows 8 in order to update to Windows 8.1. You're probably stuck with that. But it should be relatively painless, I suppose. You know,
get plenty of rest,
comfort food. You know,
get
some chocolate.
Think of a reward system for afterwards.
Another thing is, if you really hate Windows 8, you could also Google Windows 8 how to update, and you'll probably get a step by step that'll tell you exactly what to click on. Because I know that I've used Windows quite a bit before, and when I opened up Windows 8 on a tablet at the airport, I was being shown it, and it was completely unintuitive to me. And honestly, I know that if I had a Windows 8 tablet, I would probably on another computer Google how to update it, so I didn't have to rummage around and try and find the update mechanism myself. Save yourself
that
a little bit
a lot of
sense.
So I'll just
grief
have
that way.
Computers up at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
The other question, I don't know if you can answer this one or not, but I've been using Eudora as my email client for years and years and years. I've got tons of emails that I need to transfer. The computer I'm using presently uses Vista, and Eudora works under Vista. My understanding is that Windows 7, and I don't know about Windows 8, does not support Eudora. Am I stuck of going to a new email client?
Windows 7, I believe, and Windows 8 do work. I think Eudora 7 works with Windows 7 and Windows 8. I'm not positive about that. I was just Googling that right now. But I'm pretty sure about that. If you do need to migrate to another email client, again, get yourself some comfort food and some chocolate right nearby. That'll be a little bit more painful, but it shouldn't be too painful. So what you're going to need to do is make sure that your email accounts are being synced to your email client, Eudora, using IMAP and not POP. So if you're using POP, what'll happen is it'll download all of the mail messages from the server, but it won't send anything back. If you're using IMAP, what's going to happen is it'll download the messages from the server, but it'll keep them up on the server, and it'll keep them on your computer. If you delete a message on your computer, it'll actually go and delete the message from the server, too. And that way, your server and your computer stay in sync. If they both stay in sync, all you need to do, theoretically, is on your next computer, figure out what mail client you want to use, and then type in your account details, and it should be able to download everything from the server. So that's what you're going to need to do. Assuming you're using POP and not IMAP right now, what I would do first...
I think I probably am.
Yeah, what I would do first is back up your computer, as you should have a backup anyway, but back up your computer right before you do it. That way, in case something goes wrong, your mail is somewhere, you know, at least on your backup.
Right. Okay, that sounds like a very good plan.
Thank you
very much for your time.
Yeah, good luck. Have fun, I guess.
Good luck, Gordon. And take care of yourself.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, if you've got a burning question, we might have time for you. It's 800-655-5877. In the meantime, there's a...
I have just a quick comment, actually.
Okay.
Apparently, a caller called in briefly and said that Windows 8.1, they said, I understand it's still in beta, still waiting for a release version.
Oh.
So assuming, again, I haven't been covering this, or I haven't been following this, but assuming that Windows 8.1 is still in beta, you're going to have to wait for the release date. And it looks like it's coming out later this year from a quick Google search. So.
All right. So you might not have to worry about it right away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. We also had a comment about flashlights. Which has something to do with titanium, which I don't understand.
Tritium? Titanium? Something?
Oh, tritium.
Well, that was an off-air call, so...
Yeah, but who knows what that's about. Anyway,
who knows what they were saying.
Interesting flashlight technology has been around for a while. I think that's what the general timbre is of that call.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Sam, really quickly, you want to tell us about the Homer car? What's the Homer car?
Oh, so if any of you remember season 2, episode 15 of The Simpsons...
Oh, yeah, I watch it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Just episode 2?
It was on, what, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's this episode where Homer finds out he has a long-lost half-brother voiced by Danny DeVito. And
Danny, what character is Danny DeVito? His brother, who's
His brother, who is a used or not a used a car designer salesman.
Danny DeVito is a car salesman. Who would have thought?
Much like Matilda.
Yeah. That kind of sounds perfect to me.
Yeah,
I could see it.
Anyway, he comes to Homer with a request. Homer designs a new car for him because everything's been made before, and Homer comes up with this ridiculous design that has bubbles for the windshields and shag carpeting and three horns, because he says when you're angry you can never find a horn.
Yeah, so it's good to have one handy wherever you are in the car.
It's good to have three. So someone actually built this, and it looks completely ridiculous, as you would expect. It looks
great. But does it
run? It does run, actually.
Oh, it's a real car.
It's a real car. It's an actual car. It's driving around bright green, enormous spoiler.
Now I'm looking at a picture. Yeah, this is definitely a geek bit. We'll put it up on the website. You can all take a look at it. It's kind of incredible, actually.
Hey, boy, the calls just came rolling in right away. Let's hear from Peter in Monterey. Hi, Peter.
Hello.
You've got a Linux computer problem?
Well, it's actually a Windows computer problem, but I was only able to fix it with Linux. So a long time ago, I had headphones plugged into my computer, and I was walking, and I ended up breaking the headphone jack with the headphone. I hit it against something, and it broke the jack out and everything, and said, I think headphones are plugged into my computer. Mm-hmm. I was able to go into Linux and fix that problem. I could go into Alta Mixer and then turn off the sensing port. I'm not able to do that with Windows, and I was wondering if you maybe knew a
Windows workaround.
Did they have a Soundflower for Windows?
No, Soundflower wouldn't do it. No, wouldn't. I think it's about the audio device driver giving you access to that sensor or not.
I see.
Because it's a physical thing that's inside of your computer, inside of the headphone jack, which is not working currently, and so. Ideally, you want to be able to just ignore the input from it, right? Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Yeah. So the only suggestion I could give you would be to look around on the internet and see if you can find maybe a sound card driver. I mean, that's going to be a pretty rough thing to do. Of course, you're going to want to make sure you have a backup and it's not for the faint of heart. And you might not have success. If you're crazy, you could learn how to write sound drivers. You could try and find an open source sound driver and then modify it yourself. Yeah, just
weld your computer back together.
Yeah, I've even tried getting an external hard drive or an external sound card for it, and that won't even fix it.
Really? You know, another thing that you could do, and this might be just completely ridiculous, this would definitely 100% void your warranty, but you could you could find a broken computer of the same make and model on eBay, go buy it, and then take out the piece that is presumably broken and replace it. That might be some really tight soldering and stuff like that, right? That might be really difficult to do.
That's actually what I was looking at doing. I mean, I've scoured the internet for drivers, and I haven't been able to find any drivers that could help that problem. So
yeah,
that
looks
was
like
my only other option.
Looks like you've already been down the paths that I would have suggested you go down. So it's possible that you might be able to just find just the part that you're looking for, just the part that's broken. That, again, would take some sleuthing, but it's possible.
It looks like it's an optical port, too, because so the whole side of the jack came out, and it's red light shines out of it.
Let me tell you one other thing you can do. And actually, this a friend of the show, actually often on the show, Al Luckow, I think he came up with this idea, is you take a Q-tip and you cut off the very end of it, and then you can use that to clean it out. And it might just be that something's not actually broken, but something just needs a little bit of, you know, nudging. So give that a try. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Good luck. Well, you know what the sound of that music means. We must be at the end of the show, you guys.
It's over.
It's over. We had a couple of other calls on the line. Guys, go ahead and write geeks@geekspeak.org, and we'll be able to answer your questions there. This has been Geek Speak for June 29th, 2013. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used by permission. A special thanks to Rick Philman for managing the phones. Thanks for listening.